Sup, Beast Place, August 1st, 2020, by Silver. Last episode, I talked about a little bit of background on the Federal Reserve. And again, I'm talking shit here, okay? I do know stuff about this, but these aren't coherent, really well thought out. It's stream of consciousness. This is written, if you're into literature. My podcast is like On the Road by Jack Kerouac. It just goes. And that's the way I like to do it. I am not a planner. My plans tend to be go really fast that way. If something gets in your way, turn. That is not a good way to go through life. And quite frankly, it's probably not a good way to do these podcasts. But at the very least, I do the part I enjoy. I enjoy the talking part. I enjoy listening to them afterwards. And I usually have to give it at least kind of like, you know, you write a paper and you wait a few days before you listen to it idea. Anyway, buy silver. So it's, if you think about the first one, I was kind of reflecting on it. I'm like, man, I gave a lot of background, but I never like specifically said what it was. There is a lot of things I've been reading that is pointing this way. When, like I said, so we've got a little, I didn't do a history of the Federal Reserve. And then I've always said, you know, some people have these conspiracy theories about it. They're probably right. But at the end of the day, it serves a lot more people than just the people that, you know, whatever percentage of it is taken by the people at the top. That's always how it works anyway. But there's people at the bottom who are getting like, you know, $20,000 a year from their teacher's salary or teacher's pension. It's because of the Federal Reserve System, which includes Wall Street, the entire financial system of the world, more or less, is the extended Federal Reserve System. If you think about any empire in the world, that's it, because it's all interlinked. Things that happen on the Chinese stock market have effects on the American stock market and vice versa. They may not be able to directly control each other. Exchange rates are a function of this. And so it's kind of hard to delineate where the American banking system ends and the European banking system begins and where the Euro banking system is versus the German. You know what I mean? I just tend to view it as like kind of one big system. And it's not entirely accurate, but for the purposes of me bullshitting right here, it suffices. Really, they've built up a large... So why buy silver or gold? Because there is a risk of dollar crash. And let me give the first and most unlikely reason first. I talked about petrodollar. Sum it up. To buy oil from Saudi Arabia or natural gas, whatever, you need to buy it in dollars. Meaning you walk to the oil store, you need to have a stack of Benjamins. If you walk up to the oil store with any other kind of money, they're going to tell you no. You're going to have to go buy the money. This strengthens the dollar. This makes the dollar powerful. And as you've probably, I don't know, maybe you haven't, the U.S. dollar is considered the world's reserve currency. And that puts the U.S. in a very powerful position. Sanctions, which has never worked as long as I've been. I've seen them like, we're going to put sanctions on this country so they do what we want. Has never worked. They did it to Iraq for 10 years, 12 years. They were under sanctions and all kinds of stuff before they had to be invaded. It's kind of like terror bombing. Sounds like it'll work, but don't. Terror bombing meaning the way that the Allies bombed German and Japanese cities in the Second World War. Their thought was that, one, it was dehousing, which means when we would blow up all the houses of the factory workers so they had nowhere to live. Obviously blow up the factories, but then it was just like, we're just going to bomb them until we're just going to pound them into some. It does not work. According to the military theorists after the war, they said the only terror bombing that really worked was the nuclear weapons. And that's because it was like, oh crap, they're just going to keep doing this and we're all going to die. We can't stop it. But it was actually less effective than firebombing, whatever. Anyway, buy silver, buy gold. So we had that big crash in 2008, and already in 2008, there's all these economic bubbles that pop up. The first known bubble was in 15 or 16 something in the Netherlands, and it was tulip bulbs. A tulip bulb is like a seed for a tulip, but it's like huge. It's like the size of your fist, and tulips became really, really popular amongst whoever buys flowers. And so people started speculating on tulips. They started buying tulip bulbs to sell because they would raise in value. And this continued until they weren't. And so the last people, it's like hot potato. The last person left holding the potato gets screwed. So the bubble bursts and everybody loses money, right? Because there's no more buyers. It's the same thing that happened to the U.S. Real estate market when those loans started defaulting. All of a sudden, it was like there's no buyers left for your house, because people were speculating to the point where, let's say, you know, Ryan Holmes goes out and builds a development, let's say 10 houses, and one dude buys six, another dude buys two, and then two families actually buy in. And the guy that bought two houses moves into one of the houses, and three people out of 10. There was actually a lot of homeowners association type places that were like, hey, man, what the F? This place is empty. I didn't move into a neighborhood to live in, like, I would have just bought a house in the middle of nowhere. And then when the mortgage companies that were handing out mortgages like it was hot stopped doing it, you couldn't do that anymore. So a lot of people got left holding the bag. You know, my father-in-law actually barely managed to get past that. Like, he hit his economic stride sometime in the early 90s and was really heavily started investing in real estate probably in the late 90s. And so around 2006, him and his partner stopped acquiring stuff. And by 2008, they were left holding a small bag. They own half of a mountain, which they didn't want to. They just ended up buying all these lots. Not lots. They bought this huge area near a vacation place and were selling great until they weren't. And it never, this is 2020, never recovered. They never sold another lot. Now they just own that land. He owned all this land out in North Carolina, him and his business partner. They had what's called a spec house, which is, it's actually a misnomer. It was more like an example. They were using it to showcase what your house could look like up here, what the style is here, what this is like. You can do whatever you want, but that's like, so that's another bubble. It was a real estate bubble. There was a dot-com bubble in 2001, if you don't remember. This is before 9/11. What happened was a few companies start doing online stuff. It was like, ooh, you can make a lot of money. So then you get a thousand entrants trying to make money online. Much like I'm doing here on this podcast. It was like, oh, it's easy to do. Let's just do it. There's, you know, like, I'd like this podcast to be economically successful. I really would. But the truth is, this is a hobby, and that's all it's likely to be, because there are 850,000 podcasts. Close to a million. There's one podcast in the United States for every 300 people. And on top of that, most of the successful podcasters, when asked, what do you have to do to be successful in podcasting? The answer is be famous. So you can't, this is the kind of thing where a famous person can take advantage of their famosity as opposed to becoming famous doing it. Which, so obviously that particular path is not the correct path to follow, but this is fun. So here I am. Okay. Bubbles, 2001.com bubble, a bunch of dot-com companies. Remember pets.com? If you're my age, you will. They had a Super Bowl ads, and 3 months later, they're out. These companies failed to make money, and so did Amazon. For some reason, Amazon kept getting capital, but these other companies did not. And when they didn't, they folded, and all the people that had invested in them lost their money. Bubble burst. Twitter's never made money. How is Twitter still around? Who's paying for it and for what reason? So if they don't make money, but they're huge, they're subsidized. By who? For what reason? Well, what are they doing? They foment Discord. I don't see anything else that they're doing. From my point of view, I don't use it. I have friends that use it. One of which, so Pink Sheet, always talking about how he uses it to watch hockey. I'm not into hockey, and I try to get into it and I can't. So he wants to sit there while he's watching the hockey game and have it be a social event. Well, how do you make it social? You get on Twitter and you sit there and you basically have conversations with people. From my point of view, all I see Twitter is like a basically a forum for electronic lynch mobs to attack people for various reasons. But again, it's myopic. That's just, there could be, you know, send me an email and maybe you have you're like, oh no, dude, you don't get it. Maybe I don't. Okay. But it does seem like it's subsidized, and it does seem like it's subsidized for that reason. To use it as a way, like, it's a great propaganda tool because of the people that use it. Anyway, but the bubble bursts for .com, and a bunch of people lose money, And some make money because there's always short sellers and da 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 da. So, but whatever. The value of a lot of these dot-com businesses quickly went from very much to almost none, and the bubble burst. Every time this happens, the Federal Reserve saves the stock market and is ostensibly saving the economy. Now, from the point of view of someone that isn't directly, doesn't know that they're benefiting from it or isn't, it looks like, you know, a cabal of rich people. And yes, it is. However, there is historical data, Great Depression, panic in 1907, that can easily be interpreted as a lack of a Fed or inaction or incorrect action on the part of the Federal Reserve, leading to widespread economic ruin. It's hard. Now, everybody's trying to get their group, their power, their ideals to win. However, this doesn't necessarily mean that everyone's out there like greedily rubbing their hands together like Scrooge McDuck. It is easy to fall into that belief, though, because it looks that way. And I don't know. Maybe it is. Maybe it isn't. There is historical data to show that if the Federal Reserve did nothing in 2008 and said, okay, Bank of America, goodbye, we'd be left with Goldman Sachs. Like, that's it. And God knows what other trials and tribulations are going to occur. My belief is that there is a event horizon that's imminent. What does imminent mean? I don't know. If things keep going the way they're going, that the Federal Reserve is going to lose its capacity to save us. How? Why? Well, as I've already explained, petrodollars is one thing. So let's talk about that. Well, what's the risk to petrodollars? Well, the risk to petrodollars is green. If AOC and Joe Biden get their way and they manage to get the economy off of fossil fuels and onto something else, realistically nuclear power, unrealistically wind and solar, that is a threat to the petrodollar. If the petrodollar fails, the power of the dollar is going to go down and the price of gold will go up. So that's risk one. I think that's unlikely because Americans are terrified of, at least in the United States, France gets like over 80% of its energy from nuclear power. So it's fine. But in the United States, we're scared of it, so we don't have a lot of it. Solar and wind are not proper replacements, nor is hydroelectric. Hydroelectric, there just isn't enough of it. It can be consistent. There is the problem of it is dependent on rain, but it's a little bit more consistent because you can kind of control the amount of water in the reservoir. You can, you know, keep it going for longer or whatever. I don't know. It is more consistent than solar and wind for obvious reasons, nighttime being one of them. By the way, winds shift at night and during the day, especially in coastal areas. So, you know, it goes the opposite direction. Anyway, which I guess would be easy to design a turbine. Anyway, but it's not consistent, blah, blah, blah. So, but that is a threat. You get rid of the petrodollar, that weakens the dollar, that weakens the Federal Reserve's ability to use things like quantitative easing, increasing the money supply. They increase the money supply by lowering interest rates. They're already near zero and they're getting negative. So if the Federal Reserve's power to save situations like this, they would just lower the interest rate. And then as things got better, they would higher the interest rate so that the next time an event came across, they could lower it again to save it. However, after 2008, they weren't able to ever do that. They tried. So if you're sitting there thinking, no, they just kept us at low interest rates, give money to the boo. They tried. But every time it would squeak even a tiny bit up, it affected the market as such that they were like, well, we can't do this because if we do, we're going to wreck the system and then people are going to blame us. Okay, so that's problem number two. One, threat to the petrodollar. Two, there's nowhere left to go. There's a lot written about the effects of negative interest rates. Unfortunately, when I was in school, it seemed like such a far-fetched idea that we didn't spend a lot of time on it, and I don't remember it. But the effects aren't good. Here's what negative interest rate means. You get paid to take a loan. So if you borrow money, let's say you borrowed $500,000, and there's a negative interest rate of 10% over a year. Let's make it $100,000 so I can do the math. $100. Negative interest rate of 10%. You borrow $100 and at the end of the year you have to pay it back. Super simple loan, right? You pay back 90. What? here's the problem. It sounds, oh, it's great, dude. That way everybody's going to, like, borrow money, and we'll all have money to borrow, and, like, it's awesome. I'm going to buy a $50,000 car, but, like, over 5 years, I'm really only going to pay, like, 40? Like, yeah, yes and no. I don't think it would ever reach the – I don't think negative interest rates would even reach the commercial level, like, at that. But here's the problem. If it gets too out of hand, your bank account will shrink as it stays in the bank account. You won't be able to invest in bonds, because if you invest in bonds, you're going to lose money. It could happen that way. Now, normally with that negative interest rate is just at the prime rate. So you'll see – you might see zero interest rates. So it might – you might see it as, like, you're already seeing zero interest rates at if you buy a car. That's about as good as it's going to get at the commercial level. At the prime route level, it might be negative, so that banks will get $100 and then have to pay back 90 to the Federal Reserve. But you can see how that's, like, that may not be a virtuous cycle. I'm not sure. But it's definitely a threat, and it's definitely written about in financial publications as a threat to the dollar. Three. The balance sheet. What the Fed is doing, in addition to zero interest rates, is they buy up debt. So they'll buy corporate bonds. I'm not sure if they buy equities or stocks. I think they might. But think of it this way. The Federal Reserve starts owning a lot of corporate debt because no one else wants to who wants to give money to what's something really hard hit by coronavirus? Restaurants. I don't want to give money to restaurants. Fast food's probably doing okay, but your corner, depending on where you are, thank God Brian Kemp, hero of Georgia, has kept everything relatively open, so we're, like, relatively not going to suffer as much as somewhere like California. There is serious suffering, and now it's not just going to be the poorest. The richy riches, not the richest of the richy riches, but, like, the medium riches, like middle upper class and below, are going to start to feel that. When you you're making $10, $15, $20 million a year, and the way you do that is I own 10 restaurants, but they're not like fast foods. They're like, I own this Italian bistro where you get, like, the best ravioli in the world. I got, like, a sushi place that, like, it's the kind of place you only need to eat one piece of sushi, because you eat that piece of sushi and you don't eat for a week. It's so good. I own a bar. We make our own beer. The beer is so good that after you finish drinking it, you get a boner. Those places are screwed. What was I talking about? Oh, yeah, buying bonds. So there's a limit to that. How much can they buy, right? The Federal Reserve owes a ton of money in the form of government debt and buys a lot of – well, it buys government debt. So that's another issue. But there's a limit to this capability of buying bonds, right? Sooner or later, these things have limits. So John Maynard Keynes is right to a point. Who cares what the debt is? It doesn't matter. Until coronavirus hits and you decide to shut down the economy. That was a bad idea, okay? I realize sometimes, you know, everybody dies. There's only these – I used to be told as a kid, there's two things in life, son. Death and taxes. Wrong. One, you die. The minute you're born, there's only one certainty in your life, and that is you're going to die. It could be for 5 minutes from the time you come out, or it could be 125 years. I think the oldest person ever lived 125 years. That's it. Everything else is theory. So, yeah, in one lifetime, government debt doesn't matter. If you were born in 1940, you'd be 80 years old today. The government debt hasn't mattered in your life. It's actually been a good thing for you. If you live another 2 years, it may have been bad or may not. We don't know, but it's a potential risk that they're just going to run out of debt. The government who backs the Federal Reserve and the Federal Reserve that finances the government may just no longer be able to carry on the symbiotic relationship. Now, it can't break apart. The Fed can't just go, okay, U.S. government, you're on your own. Because then people will be like, oh, really? Now you've lost your guns. Now, how are you going to enforce those loans? I'm not paying you back. If you're India and the Federal Reserve, IMF, World Bank detaches itself from NATO, I'd be like, that's funny money. Well, we're going to want more money from them. No, we're not. No, we're free. Screw you. We're going to do our own Federal Reserve system. We saw how you did it. I think specifically India, I think at the high level, they'll be capable of copying it. Anyway, for themselves, not worldwide necessarily. Okay, so petrodollars running out of ability to keep the balance sheet as high as it is. And by the way, in the last, at least since 2008, the balance sheet and these like quantitative easing has followed. It is basically predicting the stock market is entirely dependent on the actions of the Federal Reserve. And like I said, if the stock market crashes, there's a lot of other related problems that are associated with it. We have an economy that's based on like lawyers, lobbyists, finance people, doctors, yoga instructors. There's nothing wrong with any of that. Well, a little bit of the finance stuff and lawyers, but really, but what are we doing that's, we produce money. That's our number one production in the United States. We make money, like, literally make it out of nothing. So when our ability to do that kind of dwindles, because it does have to be backed by some real shit sometimes. You have to be, there has to be some manufacturing base. Now, we don't have, we actually manufacture more now than we ever have. We just use less people. That's part of that whole problem. And with the way that our progressive system, like our sort of Overton window, does move left, there's a possibility of things like national healthcare, which I think is a good idea, but we're already at these huge debt levels. That could be the, you know, the camel that broke the straw. So at the end of the day, what I'm saying is that there's all this stuff, low interest rates, quantitative easing, balance sheet is printing money. Now they do it in a way that's a little bit more clever and less damaging to the economy and a little bit more of a virtuous cycle that it creates growth, and that growth then is able to offset the negativity of printing money. However, that cycle is getting to the limits of its capabilities to do it, I think. I don't know. It just seems that way. And I'm basing my opinions on finance websites that may or may not be accurate. You know, Seeking Alpha, Zero Hedge, Yahoo Finance, Wall Street Journal. I think that's the ones that that's predominantly what I'm reading. And I wonder now how much longer can it resist it? There's going to be another wave of stimulus checks to come through because they can't allow the economy to crash. Now the Democrats kind of want it to crash, but they also don't. Now they want it to crash a little bit to make Trump look bad, but they can't let it crush bad enough where people point the finger at them, right? There's always a risk. So if Trump says, I want to give people $1,200, they kind of have to go along with it, you know? And now Mitch McConnell in the Senate saying, oh yeah, here's the other problem. Yeah, we're printing money. Okay, keep printing it. Now we're not going to give it to regular people, right? Because the quantitative easing, the low interest rates, the balance sheet isn't going to be messed with, but we're no longer going to give people $600 a month in their extra unemployment insurance. So that's another threat, because now you've made it so that you're still giving the wealthy people their stuff, but now you're not giving it to the poor. So the richy riches keep getting their, even if it's only a perceptual issue. Perception is reality. Black Lives Matter has proven this. Perception is reality. If we perceive as being screwed over by the richy riches, we are being screwed over by the richy riches. So that's you've added another element. More social unrest could eventually also lead to God knows what, that could also drop the dollar in price. And when it falls, it doesn't necessarily have to crash like some airplane, just a little bit of a dip. Now the gold I have, suddenly I'm like, hey man, I want to buy a house. And they're like, yeah, what do you got? Oh, you know, I got, it says 300K on the thing. I got 300K. Oh, you do? Yeah, that's nice. Actually, I don't want dollars. I got $3 billion in cash. That's going to buy me groceries for a week. What? I can't, the government says I can't charge more than 300K for this, but I'm going to sell it. I don't know. What do you want? Well, I want a new pool at my other house, but the guy won't take dollars. He wants gold. Got gold? I got gold. How much? 3 grams? Or Bitcoin? 30,000 satoris? Done. And there you go. There's an alternative. Because, and here's the other issue. It's like, oh, well, I'm just going to go get euro, or I'm going to get pounds, or I'm going to get yuan, or I'm going to get some yen. And I think that they're really closely, globalization has made it so that it's one beating heart. And I'm not sure that you're really going to go into those are safe havens. I don't know. That's more of a question for an expert. I don't think so. And I also want something that I can put in my pocket and run from my burning house from, and also keep, like, for instance, let's say the government decides to, like, confiscate anyone with gold. They need to sell it for $4,000. All right, cool. I'll sell my gold for, but I won't sell all of it. Like, where's the rest? It shows here that you bought the rest. I used it to blah, blah, blah. Now, what would be nice is if the United States, you could buy jewelry for the gold value of the jewelry. In the United States, you can't do that. You have to pay for, like, workmanship, which means if I buy a $500 gold necklace, it's got $200 of gold in it or whatever. You know what I'm saying? In the Middle East, you can buy gold jewelry, in quotes, and that would defend you from confiscation, because you're like, oh, this is a family heirloom. They're like, oh, yeah. So I do have a little bit of that. Not a lot, but it's not something, you know, like, what am I going to do? Clip, like, 2 inches off my gold chain? So, and I don't want to buy, like, bars. I want little amounts so I can sit there and sell you, go buy a car for, like, a gram or whatever it is in the future. I don't know if this is going to happen. There's been doomsday. People have been talking about this. You should have gold in this uncertain world for, like, since I was in college. All right, so let's take the grain of salt. Let's do that. It's just so much at once. The coronavirus, for one thing, is a serious threat. Well, the lockdown associated with it. And when you combine it with all the other things I've talked about, you get to a point where there is a possibility of something happening with the U.S. dollar. I also see military readiness of the United States as the nuclear part. I have no idea which is the more important piece of it. But the conventional, I just want to go project power in third world countries piece seems not great and deteriorating. So because they're using it as, like, you know, because of all the social issues they try to attach to it, I think that weakens it. It should be a tool left alone of ideology. But it's not. And every time you do that, it weakens it. Regardless of what the ideology or the thing is. If you, you know, right now diversity is the ideology. And then associated things with it that are, like, somewhat tangentially associated. But if you instituted, like, white power. Oh, actually, that's not the way they say it. White supremacy. That would also F it up. It should be free of these things. It should be free of diversity. It should be free of white supremacy. It should be free of... It should just be there to do what it's intended to do. It's just a tool. It's not a place for you to try out stuff. But that's how they kind of use it. And I don't think that's a good idea. In any case, so that's another threat. That's very, very minor. Because to be honest, I mean, yeah, the Afghanis put up a good fight. But we'll still be able to destroy your thing. Like, if you, with the Afghanis, part of the reason they won is they don't care. Oh, you blew up my village? I don't care. I'm just going to keep coming back at you. I don't care what you do. I'm not going to stop till I'm dead. And every single one of these million dudes behind me, and the million dudes behind them, and the million dudes behind them, all feel the same. Bring it. I'm blowing myself up just to get you. I'll kill my own family members just to get you. I don't care. I will fight for, like, wolves. Wolf doesn't care. They're like inexhaustible bears. But if you're, like, I don't know, a slightly nicer third world, Morocco, No. The U.S. says, like, puts aircraft carriers off your shore and says, like, if you don't change this thing, we're going to blow you to bits. You're going to go, oh, okay. If you can. Now, in Syria, he decided to fight because I think they just wanted to kill him. And he was like, well, you're going to kill me and my family? And everybody else, they were like, you're going to do to us what you did to Iraq? Nah, we ain't giving up. But that's a small piece of this. Anyway, to stay on point, there are potential indicators that U.S. dollar value may depreciate in a short-term view. There is obviously levels of uncertainty here. I am not uncertain. It's a real way, because that's the wording you have to use. Not uncertain. I am not uncertain. I am uncertain. But I've never heard anyone say, anyway, whatever, it's the wording thing. It means I don't, the level of certainty I have is not high. It's 50.5%. If I knew more about this, I'd probably, because, you know, you read, and there's always the, you know, the guys, the naysayers. Oh, the dollar's going to drop any minute now, any minute now. It's 20 years of people saying that. How do I know? I don't. I'm guessing and I'm hedging. And again, that's just what I'm doing. I'm not telling you to do anything. I'm not giving any advice here. I will say that even for me, we're talking about 5% of my punny portfolio, maybe, to do this with, to begin with. And I'm going to buy gold and silver. Why? I don't have enough money to buy a decent amount of gold, I mean, weight-wise. Like, I can get maybe about an ounce. But for that same, for like an ounce of gold, you get like pounds of silver. So the idea being that if this does happen, so one last thing here, I'm going to go a little long, but so I aim for 22 minutes optimally, but accept 30 minutes because I don't want to cut it off and do less than 22 minutes. I don't know. It's a thing. But I really don't like going over 30, but really quickly here, just a few minutes. There's a couple potential here for reasons for silver. One, it's cheap. You can get a lot of it. But you can get more small units. So let's say the world does do what I think it's going to do and it goes tits up. And now you have to buy your groceries with gold. One trip to the supermarket is going to be like a gram of gold. Or let's say not a gram, like a tenth of a gram of gold. How are you going to do that? You're going to sit there and clip it? No. You're going to walk up and they're going to say, okay, this is a gram of gold or 10 grams of silver. And at home, you have 100 grams of gold and 300 grams of silver, 400 grams of silver. It's like having dollar bills and $5 bills, basically, right? Where you can't cut the $5 bill, right? And maybe in that economy, it would be insane if it got this bad, where you went to the store and they're like, okay, that'll be a gram of gold. Or it'll be like, that'll be 0.8 grams of gold. And you go, okay, here's my gram. And they open up a drawer and pulls out silver and copper and starts counting out silver and copper. Be like Dungeons and Dragons. Like, all right, well, there's one gold piece. And so your change is going to be 20 silver pieces and 35 pieces of copper. You're going to be walking out with like a bag full of metal. That is hopefully not what's going to happen. That's one reason. And the other reason is there's a strong possibility that if we do get into a similar situation like that, obviously you could have, you know, metal credit cards and all that jazz. If you get into that situation, the price of silver might actually increase more than gold. Do you know what I mean? Like, let's say you bought your gold today at 2,000 an ounce and the world goes tits up and now it's worth 3,000 an ounce. And you bought your gold at $50 an ounce and the world went tits up and now it's worth 1,000 an ounce. See what I'm saying? There is that potential for that as well. So thanks for listening. And don't freak out or anything. It's just like some random dude's opinion that likes to talk shit. I mean, my last podcast about flight school, and I spent how many hours talking about Dungeons and Dragons and Borderlands? I'm not saying I don't know what I'm talking about. I do. But I'm also like trying to tell you that you can't predict the future. And if you could, all these super smarty pants on Wall Street would be never ending good. You're like, yeah, but they are. No, they're not. No, they're not. Let me just name a few like near $1 trillion, like $100 billion entities that have failed and didn't get government help. Lehman Brothers, long-term capital, Aramark, Enron, smartest guys in the room. General Motors needed a government bailout. Bank of America needed a government bailout. Now you could say they were smart enough to know they'd get it. They didn't want to have to go through that crap. Believe me. They weren't like, yes, we're getting the bailout. Woo! Well, they were, but they didn't want to be in the position to need it. JP Morgan Chase. That, if you're really into conspiracy theory, that's the Bank of Rothschild. Or used, you know, was, you know, 100 years ago. The U.S. government. So these are smart people who make mistakes. Dumb people sometimes do things right. I'm just saying like, hey, I'm just trying to, can't let me put it this, I'm trying to spark an, if you're worried about this and you have a lot of investments, you should probably go out and look and talk to someone that knows a little bit more than me and figure it out. That's what I'm trying to, I don't have enough of a portfolio to get anyone to sit down and talk, okay? But, so I have to do it on my own. But if you do, that's what I would do. If you do your own stocks and shit, you should definitely have a fucking safe in your house with a gun, a little bit of gold, not a lot. If you got $1 million in a portfolio, get yourself like 10K, like one or two ounces. That's it. A little bit of like silver there to like just in case with a pile of hundreds and euros and maybe a handgun for, you know, break in case of emergency and hope to hell you never need it. All right, I babbled long enough. I love you. I love you like I love my feet. Bye.